Okay, everybody. Well, first of all, thank you for joining us this afternoon or evening, depending on where you're at. Welcome to the second edition of the DMSC Masterclass. This is a monthly class for current DMSC students, faculty, and those interested in the Doctor of Medical Science program at the Arizona School of Health Sciences, AT Still University. This really gives us the opportunity to hear from inspiring masters in the PA profession and those in healthcare who have made a difference. So a few housekeeping issues to our attendees. Please keep your microphones on mute if you would. If you have any comments during the presentation, please make that in the chat session. Once we're finished, we'll open it up to questions and you can unmute yourself. Dr. Beth Popre, our administrative manager of the DMSC, will be monitoring the chat for any questions or comments. So that's the housekeeping stuff. So anyway, so today I'm really thrilled to introduce PA Donna Seaton. Donna has been practicing in the specialty of hospice and palliative medicine for over 13 years and is the senior PA in her department in a large academic institution. She's also the charter and founding member and past president of PAs in Hospice and Palliative Medicine, a national nonprofit specialty organization affiliated with the American Academy of Physician Associates, whose mission is education and advocacy both by and for PAs in that specialty. She's also a charter and founding member of the PA Special Interest Group in the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine. She also graduated from AT Still University PA program back in 2001. So welcome, Donna. We're really thrilled to have you here. First of all, tell us a little bit about your introduction to the PA profession, why you became a PA, and some of your clinical and professional experiences before we go to some other questions.
Wow. Well, thanks for such a nice introduction. Proud AT Still alumni here. Now out, 21 years, going on 22 years. It was interesting back in the 90s, after I'd gotten my bachelor's degree at Arizona State in medical technology and clinical laboratory sciences, and had done some work in that area and also as a forensic toxicologist, I was able to interact with a lot of other types of folks in the medical professions, including at our county hospital here, and had the opportunity to speak with a lot of different types of healthcare providers. And really, it came to light that I felt that the PA profession would just be a really good fit for me. I loved the ability to cross specialties. I think it's been something that is just notable with the PA profession. I like to think of us, I guess I'm dating myself now. Yeah, I think of us as the Swiss Army knives of medicine. I guess now in this day and age, you can call us the smartphones of medicine. But you know, you need us, we can do it. So, and I originally came out of PA school in 2001 and have worked in a lot of diverse areas of medicine, including hand surgery, urgent care, urology, outpatient primary care, inpatient hospital medicine, and finally kind of found my niche about 13 years ago and have been working in the specialty of hospice and palliative medicine ever since then.
Excellent. Well, and I'm sure that there'll be some questions in a few minutes regarding your experience in hospice and palliative medicine. But I also want to go into some other interesting stuff. And of interest today is that Donna is a voice actor. Donna's voice has been described, and I've done some homework on this, as trustworthy, warm, relatable, and professional. All those things that a PA needs to be as well. With her years of experience in the healthcare and medical field, Donna is a natural choice for those seeking an educated, skilled, and clear female voice for medical and healthcare clients looking for professional voiceover talent for instructional and educational videos and podcasts and narration and commercial projects like that. With her background in acting, she is also ready and able to bring improvisational skills to any project to assure a variety of reads and can take direction well to help your project be successful. So from narration and commercial to IVR, e-learning, and corporate audio, Donna has been said that she has a voice you can count on. Friendly, easy to work with, and flexible, Donna can provide quick turnaround on professional quality dry audio from her on-site studio where she works with a MacBook Pro, yay, go Mac, running Audacity and a number of other types of software and equipment. In addition, Donna has volunteered in giving back to her community and has served as a reader and broadcaster for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a nonprofit organization that provides audio access to print information to people who can't read or hold print material due to a disability. Donna, I looked up the definition of voice acting, and I learned that it's the art or occupation of providing voices for characters in animated films, dubbed foreign language films, audios, dramas, also known as voice over artists. And they are auditory performers who work on everything from video games and commercials to audiobooks, apps, and e-learning courses. So I guess my question is, how accurate is that? And then tell us, how did you get into voice acting? And tell us, you know, some great stories about that.
Wow. Well, yes. You know, actually, when I started out in college and undergrad, I was an acting performance major, which is an interesting factoid before I ventured very, very far off course into a what has been a wonderful and continued career in the medical field. And I had the opportunity to do a little bit of voiceover work probably about 25 years ago when we were still using things called cassette tapes. Some of you might know what those are. They came right after the 8-tracks. You know, in life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. And my other plans actually were, you know, to pursue a career in medicine. And that is what I still do. Voice acting is something that I have been doing now for the last few years. And I would say your description is right on. The field has only grown. The opportunities in the field have only grown in this last, I would say 5 to 10 years with the advent of technology. Anywhere you hear a voice, there's a potential for there to be a voice actor providing that voice that you're listening to. You know, I've done work in corporate narration, medical narration, e-learning modules, commercial work. So it's been a wonderful ride and something that I can do on my own time outside of, you know, what is my continued full-time job, you know, working in hospice and palliative care.
Oh, that's great. Have you had any funny stories in the voice acting where I'm looking for, I'm looking for some sort of a funny story that you can share with us?
Oh gosh. You know, it's interesting. I have had, I think you just have to be able to think on your feet. You know, the ability to improv never hurts. You know, people who send scripts don't always think about, you know, doing, you know, grammar and spell checking. So, you know, sometimes you really have to kind of jump in and take the lead on that. Technology and especially the advent of the pandemic has really pushed a lot of people in the voice acting field, literally, you know, to home studios. So, you know, studios were closed for years and are only just barely opening up. So, you know, during that time, I was able to make a spare space in my house into a workable professional quality studio, but yet doing live directed sessions with, you know, someone who could be literally in another country, there's everything that happens in these kind of Zoom calls. So yeah, you have to be prepared for people, you know, the connections to drop and to get back online and just to be able to take direction and have someone tell you, no, you know, could you make that a little funnier? Well, what do you mean funnier? Okay, well, sure. So it's you just have to, you would appreciate this, Randy. You know, semper Gumby. You just have to just be flexible and be ready all the time and stay on your toes.
Yeah, words words are everything, is it not? I was doing a video a while back, and I was talking about what I thought were underserved communities. And I kept saying undeserved communities, you know, and finally someone had to say, you know, I think you need to get your words right. So, you know,
so close.
so close, yet so far away. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, I think I'm going to get some opportunity here for some folks to ask any questions that they might have to continue the conversation. And if you would either put it in the chat or just unmute yourself and ask your question, and we'll continue the conversation. I know some people here, so I know some of these folks are, you know, aren't afraid to speak.
Oh, please don't be.
Yeah. Awesome. So if you don't mind, Randy, I'll take the first shot at a question, because it's interesting because Donna, you live here locally, like the Scottsdale Parks and Recs has somebody who actually puts a thing in there to like come learn to see if you can be a voiceover actor. And it's a one session kind of deal. And my husband looked into it before the pandemic and it got canceled because of, you know, COVID and all that stuff. And he's since kind of found out that it's like it's an agent that's actually doing it to get people in. Then if you're interested in it and they think you've got the voice or the chops to continue on, then they try to kind of recruit you as one of their clients at that point. So I'm just curious, how do you have an agent and or how do you find jobs?
It's interesting. You would mention that, Beth. You know, it's how I kind of stumbled back into this in the last few years is I went to something very similar to what your husband was planning on doing before COVID shut the world down. And it was, I would say it was a combination of a informational, this is what it's like to work in voiceover, combined with a, oh, by the way, we offer a training program. And I did actually take advantage of that opportunity. I took advantage of that training program, which included live online sessions with experienced coaches, voice coaches, and acting coaches in the field. It was about, oh gosh, I want to say it was probably 8 months long. And there was, you know, homework. They walked you through how to set up a home studio that would produce audio that could be professional quality. Gave you the basics of how to market yourself. And also at the end of the program, you know, there was a professionally produced commercial and narration demos that is essentially the equivalent of your business card. And that's how you kind of shop yourself around. There's, you know, social media, as we all know, is a great opportunity to try and, you know, spread the word as to what you do and how to get in touch. I have a website. And there are also for voice actors and other types of folks, there are what we call pay-to-play sites. So you can, it's job postings are available and you can kind of match up with these audition opportunities, paying a monthly fee to access those opportunities. And I also have a representation with one agency out of California. And that affords a little bit more exclusive access to some auditions. So I would say voice acting is, it's about 90%+ auditioning and marketing and about, you know, 5 to 10% actual time in the studio. So it's a lot of marketing and a lot of trying to make connections and build relationships.
When do you get your SAG card?
You know what? You know, actually, Arizona is kind of a right to work state. So there's plenty of non-union work to do. And in fact, most jobs are either union or non-union. As a non-union voice talent, you can get a union job, and then you have to start working on making a decision as to whether or not you want to move on and kind of pay the money to join SAG. And I haven't, you know, haven't really gotten to that level yet, but something to look forward to in the future when I have less on my plate as a PA and more time on my plate for this.
Excellent. All right.
But great question, Beth.
Yeah. All right. Questions, you guys.
about anything. Anything. Well, I mean, almost anything.
Come on there. I'm going to call on you, Mr. Macy. I know that you've done a lot of hospice and palliative medicine work. Share with us what you're doing and see if you have any questions.
Well, yes, I've been involved for about 13 years now as a volunteer, a hospice volunteer. So I'm currently volunteering for two different agencies. And I brought into this process my golden retriever, who is a service dog and a therapy dog. So that's broadened my horizons as a volunteer. And I find it fascinating to see that connection between the patient and the animal. And I usually fade into the background quite rapidly and let the magic occur. So thank you for what you're doing, Don.
Oh gosh, it's a pleasure and a privilege, actually. I feel like people get drawn into this specialty because you're, in a way, it's just a very good fit. I feel like it can be challenging for some folks to work in a specialty that can be sometimes very emotionally demanding, but yet so rewarding that, you know, once you're in it and you feel like it's your right fit, you really kind of feel like you're home. I think it's like the ultimate in patient focused care.
I agree.
I'm curious, Donna, how did you said about 13 years ago is when you changed into the specialty. So was there a catalyst?
Yeah, actually the hospital I was working at and continue to work at, got funding to start a palliative care service in their facility. I was working as a hospitalist PA at that time and really could see that there was this need, you know, for these patients and the value that would come from being a part of that type of setting. Sorry, you guys. I think I'm having a little audio issue on my end. It's because I have a cat who decided to walk behind my laptop. You can't see him, but he's back there. but I had the opportunity to apply for that position. And I have worked on that service initially for the first, I would say, 11 years as an inpatient palliative care specialist consultant working in the acute care setting. Spent some time working in the skilled nursing portion of our facility where there are inpatient hospice beds. And also now for the last, I would say, year and a half, I've been working in the outpatient palliative care clinic. So it's been just a tremendous opportunity to see the range and ability for what we can do in all of those care settings. It's just been tremendous. I will put in a shameless plug for our specialty organization, PAs in Hospice and Palliative Medicine, PAHPM.org. Lots of fantastic resources and educational opportunities and monthly meetings. I know that in our specialty, there are still not all that many PAs. So, you know, we oftentimes will get folks that come to the website just to find out how to connect with the other folks that have an interest or and maybe working in the field.
Donna, what tools do you use as far as for palliative care? What's in your bag of goodies, so to speak? Meditation-wise, I'm sure there's everything as far as some psychology, sociology. But I was just wondering, are you guys using any ketamine or anything like that?
You know, not in our setting per se, you know, especially now that I work in the outpatient clinic where I'm following patients longitudinally over time with, you know, maybe they're not quite hospice appropriate, but we try and focus on folks that have a serious life-limiting illness and probably a prognosis of maybe, you know, 3 years or less so that we can kind of get involved in the care of these patients and their families and caregivers also really importantly to provide them the ability to kind of navigate through this course of a serious illness. We try and focus on helping manage symptoms related to the underlying disease. And sometimes we'll engage with our oncology colleagues. I follow patients along with our oncology service, our pulmonology service for our COPD patients, our cardiology service for our heart failure patients. And we have a great team at our facility. I have other advanced practice providers. I work with physicians. I have access to a medical psychologist. I have a social worker. I mean, I have a clinical pharmacy specialist that's dedicated to our outpatient clinic. So I would say not in the outpatient setting. I would say the mainstays are still, you know, kind of opioids when needed, other adjuncts. I mean, we use things like capsaicin cream, lidocaine patches. We use gabapentin as an augment. But I would say also something that's really valuable that I feel like we also offer to our other colleagues is I'm a certified goals of care conversation trainer. So I provide training for our fellows, for residents, for interns, medical students, and other healthcare staff in really getting them more comfortable with just the process of breaking serious news to patients and families. And then how do you approach the conversations about what's most important to that patient and make recommendations that are most likely to meet the patient's goals? Where I think we really want to try and make sure just because we can do things in medicine doesn't always mean we should. And we need to take the time to get to know our individual patients so that we can make sure they're getting the care that they want and not being put through things they don't. So absolutely. I know it's a really long answer, Lee. My elevator speech is like on the Empire State Building at this point. So
appreciate it. Thank you.
I think Catherine's got a hand up.
Catherine, yeah.
Yeah. Dawn, I'd like to give a shout out to you and the PAs and palliative care group, and some recognition of the fact that you all are soon going to have your own CAQ in palliative care. So a shout out to all of you for going right ahead and taking center stage where you need to be. I'd just like to make the comment that in terms of, you know, the question that Lee just asked about, you know, what do you have in your toolbox or whatever? What I would suggest is that what you have in your toolbox is what every PA should have in their toolbox. And I think, or at least I believe that those skills and that skill set is a skill set that we need to look more carefully at incorporating in our entry-level PA education. Because it's very, I think it's very important. I think it's part of that patient-provider relationship. I had the opportunity several years ago of working with our medical director at our PA program here at UT Southwestern in Dallas, and we were working with second-year internal medicine residents, trying to work with them around what we're calling behavioral medicine, although they rather caustically referred to our hour a week for 6 weeks with them as the touchy-feely course. But one of the things that at that stage of their training that we tried to work with them with was around one of the areas that you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, and that's how to give bad news and how to deliver that bad news and meeting the patients where they are and finding out how do they like to get bad news? Or how would they like to hear it? Do they want to have the whole load, or do they want to have it an appetizer at a time in terms of the journey and the path that they're on? So that's just a couple of thoughts I wanted to share in terms of what you're doing is what every PA should be doing in their care and taking care of patients.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you for that, Catherine. I think, this is, you know, this is the pot calling the kettle. So that, you know, we're all on the same page there. You know, I completely agree. And I feel like the CAQ is, it's been a long time coming. It's been something we've been working on probably since our creation as a specialty organization in AAPA, which was back in 2011. And I think what it's going to help with are potentially some workforce issues for our profession and the specialty. I know folks have a lot of mixed feelings about CAQs, myself included.
Also like to give a shout out to the palliative care PAs, particularly Kathy Kemele and Vidya, who took on being the editors of the PA handbook for PAs, palliative care and medicine.
Indeed.
It was quite an undertaking, but I think it hopefully is making a real contribution to the literature.
I would say so. I would say in the last 2 to 3 years, we've had Elsevier did the very first issue of PA Clinics that was focused on hospice and palliative care. And that entire issue was written by PAs for PAs. Every author was a PA, and the guest editors were PAs. And also Kathy and Nadia, we all work so closely together. We're still a very small organization, but very energetic. Maybe it's all the caffeine. We've made just tremendous strides. It's been wonderful to see how far we've come in the we've been around.
Yeah. Thank you for all you do.
Well, let me ask another question that sort of Catherine brought up and Donnie, you did a few minutes ago. And that is PAs who want to get involved in hospice and palliative care and don't know what they don't know. And so what would be your advice for new PAs just graduating or PAs who have an interest to get involved in that? And sort of back to what Lee talked about, what do they need to have, to move into that specialty? That's sort of a big question, but what would be your advice?
Boy, that is a big question. I'm hating my cat right now. It's a good thing he's so cute and he lets me live here and feed him. Dogs have owners and cats have staff, and that has never been more true than now. He's not even going to make a camera appearance. That's the worst part. I think first of all, I think it's important to explore the interest that you feel like you may have. Good God, buddy. That you may have in the field. Am I back?
Yep.
Okay. I think you need to truly explore your interest. I think the specialty is not necessarily for everyone. I think having an interest is good. I also agree with Catherine that there's a certain skill set that comes with being able to sit down with a patient, their family, their caregivers, break serious news to them in a way that is sensitive and empathetic, but yet truthful, that builds rapport, and then also be able to take that information and your relationship with that patient and their family to find out what technically we like to call goals of care. What are the goals of care for the patient? Which essentially just means what is most important to that person, knowing how ill they are and what maybe their life expectancy might be. So that you can continue to build a rapport, know your patient, know what's most important to them, and try and ensure the care they get is what's most important to them. I think that I've found in the last 10 to 13 years I've been in the specialty, the amount and quality of that type of education, the education in breaking serious news, in elucidating goals of care, and those communication skills really varies wildly from training program to training program across every type of healthcare provider. So I think our organization's website has gone out of, we've really done a lot of work to try and make sure that the information on, where are their sources of information, including some free sources of information to learn more about what the specialty does. What does this look like? What do I, what are some skill sets that I can try and acquire? that would be a great jumping off point. We also have monthly meetings that are, you know, essentially kind of open monthly meetings for folks to just drop in, meet other folks that are working in the specialty. And it's entirely possible you may meet a PA that's working in your area you may be able to connect with. But it's a, boy, you're asking me a lot of tough questions, and it's definitely not at all about my side gig. But that being said, and in a perfect world, I think every provider, every type of healthcare provider, including all PAs, regardless of what specialty you work in, you're not going to really be able to escape the necessity of having to break serious news to a patient. So, you know, a lot of what we do in our, you know, as a specialty level palliative care provider is literally talking about life and death and limited prognosis and hospice enrollment and things like that. But if you're a primary care provider, breaking serious news to a patient can be telling them they have diabetes. That is a life altering, you know, change your life diagnosis. So I think every PA should have the training, or, you know, try and find the training to feel more comfortable with having those discussions.
I heard Kathy say one time that part of it is learning how to give patients permission to be storytellers.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Donna, here's another hard question, and that is, I'm sorry. You've been in the specialty for, you know, over a decade. How do you protect yourself? How do you protect your own well-being in the middle of giving patients bad news, or maybe that's the wrong term, giving them news that for various reasons, but how do you take care of your own psyche while you're providing this care to other patients?
I think the term self-care gets bandied about quite a bit, especially in this last couple of years with the pandemic and everything that a lot of us have gone through in every walk of medicine, every specialty. But I don't think it should be taken lightly. I think it's really important for people to take care of themselves, to have a really good, healthy work-life balance, that, you know, work should stay at work. And life needs to be something that's not work. I think it's helpful to have other outlets and other things that you enjoy doing. I think, you know, it's really important to, that's part of why I do something completely different. That's part of why I got into voice acting. Some of it was my background and my prior training, but some of it was really to have an outlet to do something that was more creative, that was, you know, not work. In the context of being in, you know, an actual setting where you're delivering serious news to a patient, I think the most important thing to keep in mind is it's really not about you.
Yeah.
It's not about you. It's about that person. It's about that person's family. It's about what's most important to that person. While things can be emotional, I think most of it is holding space for that person and that family to provide the support that they need at that time. And then oftentimes, you know, you can debrief with other colleagues and team members afterward to kind of talk about a difficult meeting or talk about, you know, a difficult situation. Our medical psychologist is fantastic, and so is our social worker, as far as, you know, having kind of, we all support each other. So, you know, we have weekly meetings as a team, and we have the opportunity to kind of debrief and even degrief about some of these situations. So I think there's a multifaceted approach to how you deal with the emotions that come along with, you know, with working with this patient population. Another tough question. Well, you got another curveball for me there, Randy?
Oh, no. I've used up all my questions, and I want to give other folks time to share or ask questions. So who else is out there that wants to talk?
I do have another question about your voiceover. You mentioned the local name of the company. It's Sun.
It's called Sun Sounds of Arizona.
So how did you get connected with them? Because I know there's just been this great, you know, long history of people that have been doing this, like, you know, reading the newspaper for, you know, the elderly, people who have these sight concerns. And
I am, true confessions, I am an NPR listener. It's on the local NPR station here. Occasionally you will hear, you know, that there is a kind of a nonprofit within the NPR station here. And I found out that they had opportunities for volunteer broadcasters. So I pre-pandemic, went down to, where they, you know, where the radio station, and was able to, they had me do a reading test and, you know, make sure I could pronounce things and that they liked my voice. And then they were like, okay, well, congratulations. here you go. And it was just a tremendous opportunity to be able to, I would go into the studio an evening a week and read sections of USA Today with another volunteer reader, so that, you know, folks with different types of disabilities who either couldn't read the print themselves or just didn't have the ability to hold print media could have an opportunity to stay up to date on everything. You know, there was a woman who was a volunteer reader, and every day she read the coupon section because that's important to people. And I would do, you know, readings out of different types of magazines that, you know, folks could tune into for, I guess you can kind of almost think of it as a podcast. And it's just it was a wonderful way to give back to the community. COVID really kind of put the kibosh on some of that stuff though, but a tremendous opportunity to give back. I will also say, your voice acting, or, you know, being a voice talent or a voiceover artist, there's a bunch of words for us. It doesn't necessarily mean that you need to have, you know, what other people feel like is a great voice. You know, you don't need to be able to do characters. Not all of us work in animation. Boy, that'd be awfully nice though. I would love to be on the next Pixar movie, but it's not meant to be. Right now, because all the big actual Hollywood stars do that. But you know, there are opportunities for all different types of folks that have different types of voices and sounds to have opportunities in the field. And I think volunteering with an organization like Sun Sounds is a great way to give back to the community and figure out, hey, is this something I would really like to do? Before I make an investment in more formal training or, you know, or the equipment needed to have a studio and, you know, in the house or, and it's a way to give back and a way to kind of dip your toe in the water and go, is this really for me? And you might find it is. It was great to do it.
Other questions?
What other kind of questions do you guys have? Comments, bad jokes.
Is there opportunities now for primary PA student training for externships or mentoring in palliative care?
Am I the only one who can't hear Herb?
No, I could hear him.
Oh, okay. What I was asking is if there are opportunities for PA students now to do externships in palliative care.
Uh-oh.
Or mentoring. That darn cat.
Donna, can you hear us, Donna?
Yeah, I don't think she can. I typed in the box that we can hear her, but I think her cat unplugged something.
Yep.
Well, that's horrible.
We can hear you.
Here, let me try this.
Okay.
How about now, guys?
We can still hear you. Yeah.
Now I can hear you guys too.
All right. Herb, do that. Do a remake.
Okay.
Take it from the top.
Take three. what I was asking about is for primary PA students today, are there opportunities for them to have either externships or mentoring experiences in palliative and hospice care?
Dean, I think it depends on where they're located and how deep the, frankly, how deep the bench is in the areas where there may be opportunities for clinical rotations. We do have opportunities to network with other practicing PAs in the specialty at our monthly meetings to find out if there's an opportunity or if there are PAs that are in your area that might be able to or willing to serve as preceptors for students who have a special interest.
Yeah, I know that in my primary practice for many years, we did basically cradle to grave work, and hospice was almost non-existent. So when I got involved, it was a real eye-opener what that whole area of expertise was about. Because basically it didn't exist 45 years ago to any great extent, you know. So, and then the other thing I was going to comment on is here in Lake Havasu, Arizona, one of our hospice programs is starting a program where we give the patient an iPod, which I know is kind of older technology, but we do playlists for them so that they have that kind of a release, you know, for them to cause relaxation over medication, you know, et cetera.
Oh, definitely. I think that there's a huge amount of benefit to be gained from, well, I don't need to tell you this, Herb, you know, pet therapy, music therapy, having different types of support brought in. You know, not everything's benzos and opioids. You know, a lot of symptom management is kind of looking at what we like to call, you know, total pain. Some patients, you know, really their biggest source of suffering is actually worrying about, you know, if their wife is going to lose the house after they pass away. Yeah. Or, you know, there, you need to find out, it's a team sport. And that's another thing that palliative care and hospice is truly, it's a team sport. And that's why I feel like our profession is so well suited for this specialty, and why I hope we just continue to grow in numbers. Because, you know, PAs were team before team was cool. And now it's cool again. So, you know, yay us. But I think part of what's important to recognize often, and this kind of comes back to what you were saying, Randy, is, you know, what is important for PAs to know or to find out, you know, if they're interested in the specialty. Sometimes it's recognizing that the patient has pain or suffering, and then realizing that you may not be the right tool in your toolbox for that. Sometimes, you know, the chaplain's the right tool for that. Sometimes my medical psychologist is the right tool for that. Or my social worker is, because she can sit with the patient and try and make sure the patient has, you know, the proper paperwork, you know, help them, you know, get in touch with pro bono attorneys to do their estate planning, because that's what's keeping them up at night. So, you know, it's very much a team-based care that's focusing on what's most important to the patient and relieving all the sorts of suffering that they have.
One of the things that we've instituted here locally is a thing we call the Veterans Salute. So when we have somebody in hospice that has been a veteran, we go to their facility or their home, present them with new dog tags, a plaque, a flag, and everybody from all the different disciplines in hospice come to that gathering. And it's been pretty amazing to see how that lets them tell their life story and brings them back to the center of who they are. And I found that to be really a fun thing to do, actually.
I mean, it really shows the ultimate respect for those people and their experience, you know, that they had a whole life and a whole spectrum of what they did and who they were and are, you know, before they passed away. And being able to recognize, you know, what for so many people who served was an important part of their life and their identity, and recognizing that is so valuable to the patient's family and caregivers. You know, I'm familiar with the final salute sort of process, and it's tremendous. It's it really is.
You know, Donnie also says something about music therapy, and so many things that are out there that could be utilized. I have to do a little shout out to Herb. As long as I've known Herb, he has a great voice. And when he was in practice, he went to his office and he had a guitar there. Yes, and he would sing to his patients. And I know he's done that in hospice. And so I think there's something to be said for that as well. So kudos to you, Herb, for, and I know you weren't going to say anything, but you do a lot of music therapy for your patients.
And again, you know, we want to try and help all these folks as best we can. When I worked on the, oh, very nice, Herb. That's very cool. I remember having patients in, you know, in the ICU who were not expected to survive their hospitalization. And I would have our recreation therapy department, you know, get an iPod or some sort of, you know, way to put the speakers on, you know, little earbuds on the patient's ears and play music from their favorite artists. You know, we've had patients who, you know, whose clinical picture smoothed out near the end of their life because they were listening to Frank Sinatra. And that was what was most important to them. You know, that got them into a much better place. So, you know, huge opportunities for non-pharmacologic, not that we don't use plenty of that stuff too, but I feel like it's important to realize, you know, your toolbox has a lot of drawers in it, and, you know, ignoring any of those, you know, is potentially leaving something off the table that could be on it.
Excellent. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time, but before we, some final comments, Donna, what's next for you, either in voice acting or hospice and palliative care? What's your next thing?
What's next for me? You know, I think this was a lesson well learned, not to take part of my stuff out of my studio and try and put it in my office, because my cat really ruined this for us a little bit. Sorry about the audio problems. The studio is actually in a non-air-conditioned room in the house, and I thought it was just better to not be in there sweating with you guys. Lee's laughing because he's in Las Vegas. So but anyway, no, I feel like my, you know, my goal is to continue you know, every day doing the best I can in my specialty, where I feel like I help someone, at least someone, every day. I look toward doing more voiceover when I have more time, and, you know, retirement for me is not all that long off, potentially, but it's nice to have as a creative outlet and as some, you know, something for me to do that helps with work-life balance, that I hope to, you know, take up more of my time in the future. But I'm looking forward to continuing on in both of these things. And, you know, again, as Catherine, you pointed out, you know, continuing to move the needle as far as, you know, the role that PAs play in the specialty, advocating that, yes, absolutely, PAs can do this work, and we should be doing this work, and more of us should be doing this work. And on the, you know, the physician and other provider side, and AAHPM, which is our companion organization on the physician side, letting them know, hey, PAs are out here, we do this. And, you know, when we give presentations at AAPA, hey guys, you guys can do this. So advocating for the specialty with our PA colleagues, and then advocating for our profession with the rest of the folks that are working in hospice and palliative, and continuing our work with NCCPA and the CAQ that's coming. I think you can start the process at the end of this month.
Yep.
And Kelly, thank you for that. Kelly was just saying in the chat, it's comforting when a hospice provider takes the time to explain the dying process to patients and their families. And I think that that's also an important part of being on the journey with patients and families, again, is being being empathetic, open, and honest with things like prognosis, with things like, you know, what the anticipated course is likely to look like. And most importantly, to make sure patients and their families know that they are not alone on this journey. And, you know, we're there with them.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. If anybody's interested in knowing more about Donna and her voice acting, you can check out her webpage at voicesbydonna.com. And, you know, Donna, thanks so much for your time participating in our masterclass and joining us today. And, you know, and it just brought a lot of humanness to our conversations today. And I think your cat helped you with that. So that's good.
That's what he did. Semper Gumby. Thank you back there for stepping on all my wires, sir. I did put in a shameless plug. I put in the website for PHPM.org. I would say if you have any interest at all, or you just want to learn more about the specialty, that would be a great jumping off point.
Great. Thank you all for joining us today. Please mark your calendar for our next masterclass. It's going to be on Monday, August 22nd, 2022 at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Our guest is going to be Richard Muma, PhD, MPH, PAC. Dr. Muma became the first PA to be named president of a university when the Kansas Board of Regents announced his appointment as president of Wichita State University in 2021. And as you may know, Wichita State University is a Division I research university located in Wichita, Kansas. And actually, Rick and I started our education career together in our first year in education at Wichita State. So we'll look forward to that. And so the best to all of you. Once again, Donna, thank you. We'll look forward to hearing more things about what's going on. And everybody have a great evening.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care. Have a good evening.